Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Writing this month's commentary about equine learning got me thinking more about how inductive and deductive learning plays out in dogs and cats. For those unfamiliar with the terms, inductive learning involves making generalizations based upon behavior observed in specific cases. Compare this to deductive learning, which uses information, premises, or accepted general rules to reach a proven conclusion. You can see evidence of inductive learning most clearly in young animals of all species before any formal training begins. A good example of this is the development of basic communication skills. All animals use a combination of vocal and non-vocal displays to communicate. Recall the ease with which young children pick up words and phrases just by listening to others talk and paying attention to the context in which those words and phrases are used. Once they make these connections, they begin to use these words and phrases in other contexts. It happens so naturally that few of us can remember a time when we didn't know our native tongue. Additionally, children lucky enough to be raised in bilingual homes can learn more than one language simultaneously using this approach. Now compare this to learning a foreign language as an adolescent or adult using a deductive approach that focuses on accepted rules of pronunciation, grammar, and composition. Many of us who learned a second language later in life will admit that would never fool anyone who's spoken that language from an early age. If you're like me, the thought of learning two new languages, or rather being formally taught two new languages simultaneously as an adult, is enough to give you the vapors. What about dogs and cats? How do they learn to communicate effectively with others? Young puppies and kittens begin laying the groundwork for effective communication with their own kind before they're weaned. And what their moms teach them depends on the physical and mental environment they're in. The communication shared by nursing bitches or queens who raised their young in garbage dumps, warehouses, abandoned cars, or hidey holes in the woods or desert will differ from each other. And all of those forms of communication will differ from that shared by same species animal parents raising their youngsters in quality human companion animal environments. Additionally, what these parental animal adults communicate to their young regarding the status of humans also will vary. Unlike puppies and kittens raised in harsh environments who may perceive people as threats or even predators, those raised in quality companion animal homes will view people as beneficial or neutral presences. When older puppies and kittens move into companion animal homes, the learning process continues. How well this works depends on how aware the people in the new household are about their new pet's capacity for this kind of learning, and how fast generalization occurs, and how this can create problems for humans and animals alike. Let's consider some examples. Over the years, multiple puppies and kittens have grasped the combination of factors that will cause me to stop what I'm doing and pay attention to them. Some quickly discovered that a certain look would do it. Others used a particular vocalization. Some of these looks and vocalizations were sad to the point of pathetic, others demanding. Still others made me laugh. Regardless of the circumstances in which each puppy or kitten first displayed the behavior, they all generalized the behavior that got the desired results to other situations. Although the current feline resident, Bamboo, has a limited but effective vocal repertoire when it comes to me, that's probably because I've become more proficient at ignoring feline vocalizations I knew could lead to problems. Bam quickly figured this out and apparently decided to take a different approach when he wanted my attention. Staring, but not your usual run-of-the-mill staring. For Bam, that was so yesterday. Unfortunately, the first time he used his new approach, I was so surprised, I made the feline desired response before I gave its generalization any thought. It happened like this. I routinely read in bed before going to sleep. While I do this, the dogs usually sleep at the foot of the bed. While some of my cats adopted the same routine, others like Bam did or didn't, depending on what else was going on in the house and outdoors. One night, when he was a youngster, I became so deeply engrossed in my book, I didn't even realize Bam was on the bed. When his ears and then his large, staring, greeny-yellow eyes slowly emerged above my book, and his pupils slowly but fully dilated with interest, he startled me. I laughed and rubbed his silly little head. He then tested my positive response to his stealth approach several more times. When it continued to work, he quickly generalized it to other settings. In addition to any books, I have seen Bam's ears and then his eyes with their slowly dilating pupils emerge from a wide variety of objects, both outdoors and in. Years later, it still makes me laugh. Now consider this fairly common feline scenario that often doesn't turn out so well. The first year some house cats mature and go into territorial protective mode, they may revert to nocturnal patterns of behavior. They prowl, they vocalize, they knock things over as they try to track some perceived threat they can see out in the yard. All perfectly normal forms of feline behavior under those circumstances. If the suddenly awakened human resident decides that Sabrina the cat must be hungry and feeds her, well, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to know what will happen next. When we add social learning to inductive learning, the process becomes even more efficient. For example, apparently, I taught Fricket to swear at objects that do not do what she wants them to do. In my case, this includes those electronic and mechanical devices with which I have a love-hate relationship at best. From the time she was a puppy, Fricka has spent a lot of time in the office where any negative human-object communication was most likely to occur. Instead of feeding the dogs breakfast in their bowls, I put it in a collection of food dispensing toys and let them figure it out. While they do, I'm free to do yoga without interruption. Among Fricka's collection is a small Buster cube that she loves to roll around the first floor. Sometimes the cube rolls under the wood hoop or between the legs of a dining table chair with its multiple cross spindles, or the rolling cube stops on a register when the furnace is on. When this happens, Fricka stamps her front feet, growls, snarls, and barks at the toy, but all in a low volume. This is between her and the toy. It has nothing to do with me. If I move the toy into the open, she may or may not resume the game. When she opts to ignore the misbehaved Buster Cube, she may give the toy one last look and a little sniff, as if to say, "If you don't play nice, I won't play with you. So there." The fact that she probably learned this behavior from me is fascinating, but also somewhat disorienting and embarrassing. That she taught it to her son, Ollie, doesn't surprise me. I suspect that all of you with animals can think of unique examples of your animal's inductive learning skills and ability to generalize. All you need to do is to stop thinking about what you want to train them to do how, and pay attention to how readily they can generalize what they've learned from so many sources in so many different ways. If you've invested a lot of time and energy in training your animal, you initially may feel vulnerable when they take what you deliberately or unwittingly taught them and run with it. But as I discovered, once your bruised ego recovers, you'll be able to appreciate what incredible natural learners they are.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.